Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Raven Real Spill Radio. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, comes to bring to y'all another night of horror. You dig what I'm saying? I hope everybody is having a good day. I definitely am. And, you know, this thing is winding on down. This is night 29 of the series. If you haven't caught the other 28 shows, go back, listen to the playback. Then come and listen to this one. You know, you have to listen to these things. And, you know, some of them might be repetitive. I'm not going to front and lie on you. Some of them, you might be like, oh, wait a minute. Wasn't that on episode 2? Maybe so. Don't judge me. I'm just here for the entertainment aspect of it all. I never said that it's going to be new each time. So that for, you know, you can't even... You can't get me on that technicality. But, man, I have been enjoying these 29 nights. It has definitely fueled a fire in me that, you know, I was like, I never thought I could do something repetitive, like, for 29 days. Like, that is unseen and unheard of for me outside of poetry. But child support and love and stuff like that has definitely been making me want to push for it, because it was a couple of nights that I was like, man, do I even want to do the night? But I was like, if I skip the night, then I'm going to have to do 4 hours the next night, and that just don't make no sense. So tonight, we going to get into it. If you want to call in, the number is 914-205-5813, 914-205-5813. Make sure that you call in. If you're listening online, thank you. If you're listening to the playback, man, your support and love is, you know, definitely appreciated. But we're going to get into the show. Let's go.
My friends and I have a Snapchat group together, which means when someone sends a picture to the group, everyone gets the picture. There's five of us in the group, me, Marvin, Glenn, Joe, and Jared. One day at school, Jared told me he lost his phone and didn't have Find My iPhone on, which sucked for him. But, well, what could we really do about it? The rest of us continued about our daily lives. I was at the gas station and saw a funny-looking guy who looked like he didn't know how to use a gas pump. So I thought it'd be funny to sneak a quick video of him and sent it to the Snap group that I had with my friends. I got home and checked Snapchat and saw the Snap was opened. I checked which of my friends opened it and was kind of surprised to see Jared's name under the opened list. I texted to Jared asking if he found his phone, but the text never said delivered. I asked all my other friends if they had spoken to Jared about his phone. Joe said he was hanging out with Jared. As we spoke, he also said Jared did not find his phone. He put Jared on the phone for me and told me to come over. When I got to Joe's house, he and Jared had already thought to look at the Snap map to see that the location had not been turned off, and it said whoever was using Jared's phone last opened it 4 minutes ago. Its location was an abandoned construction ground. Ready to go kick some ass, or at least thinking we agreed to drive down to the construction site. Getting there was quick and easy, but hopping the fence and navigating in the dark was a different story. According to the Snap map, Jared's iPhone was somewhere in a big abandoned building in front of us. The three of us, all above 6 foot, definitely felt we could get the better of anyone in a fight. But what was this person doing in this building at this hour? The situation was just too unsettling. We found a big hole in the wall where we could enter the building. It was cold and empty in there. Besides the rubble and graffiti, everywhere and every little sound created an echo. The last time Snapchat updated Jared's location was 5 minutes ago, but the location was right on top of us. It didn't seem like anyone or anything was on the first floor, so we went to the second floor. We found ourselves in a big empty room. Joe checked the location of Jared's phone one more time, and it appeared that all three of our phones were in the same exact location, which was weird. Where could his phone be? The sound of a digital camera shutter accompanied with a blindingly bright flash coming from an adjacent room made the three of us freeze like a deer in headlights. Then Jared was the first one to run for it, screaming. Joe and I followed soon, running back down the stairs and out of the hole to the outside. We got to the car and drove back to Joe's house. On the way back, Joe and I got a Snapchat from Jared's phone. I was the first one to open it, and it was a picture of three of us standing in that room with the caption, "Run." We never went back to that building for his phone. In fact, after that, the location on Jared's phone was turned off, until, of course, Jared signed in on a different phone. As a kid, I had a bedroom on the first floor. Money was a little tight, and our mom was taking care of 4 kids. I was the youngest, so I had the little room. My room was next to the living room, a small square room with wood flooring. There was one vent in this room, near the floor, and also one more vent in the ceiling. My bed took up half the room. Like I said, it was a very small room. I'll keep it short and straight to the point. I was 13 years old doing my homework on my bed, since I didn't have a desk in my room. That's when I heard a child's laughter. I went outside my room to look around the living room and kitchen for any of my siblings. Everyone seemed to be upstairs, though. Usually, in these kind of stories, you hear people say they just chalk these kind of things up to their imagination. But that's stupid. I definitely heard that laughter. There's no way I imagined something so clear. I continued my homework with one ear perked up, listening for any other suspicious sounds. Eventually, enough time passed that I was able to move past it. In fact, it seems it was just about when I was able to get over it, I heard it again. Child's laughter. more so giggling. I should say this time it went on longer. It wasn't coming from outside my room. It was somewhere in the room. I figured one of my brothers were hiding from me. I followed the sound of the laughter, strangely, to the corner of my room, and I looked down at the vent. It was coming from inside the vent. I got down on my knees and pressed my ear up to the vent. There was no more giggling at this point, though. When there was a silence for a few seconds, I lifted my ear from the vent and put my eyes up to the vent to get a peek inside. It took me a second to realize I was staring at a pair of eyes looking back up at me. I shrieked like a girl and screamed for my mom. She came storming into my room moments later, but of course the noises were gone, as were the eyes. My mom thought I was going crazy due to a lack of sleep, but I refused to sleep in that room. So she let me sleep in her room that night. That went on for a week, actually, before she put her foot down. I spent the next 4 years in that same bedroom before we moved. Nothing paranormal ever happened to me since that one particular night.
The year I turned 13, my friend invited me and two other friends to stay at his house on Halloween night. He had a fairly large house outside of our town, and it was the perfect place to go trick-or-treating. We decided it would be cool to go now to get sweets for a movie. So, fast forward. We were near the end of our trick-or-treating, and at one house, a woman answered the door. She was tall and skinny with shoulder-length hair. Her house was disgusting. We could smell the odor of cigarettes from inside. She was quick to tell us that there were no more sweets left. However, she could go try to find something for us. After a couple minutes of waiting, she comes back with an old brown paper bag with old-looking candy inside. We kindly deny the bag and tell her we're getting picked up, so we better go. She grabs one of my friends and says, "No, please." But my friend pulls away from her, and then she quickly shuts the door. We knocked on a few more houses before hearing something going on near the parking lot of the housing complex. Someone exclaims, "They took my child, they took her, they took her." It was her, that woman. And that was my friend's parents' car that she was banging on. She was throwing herself at the car and hitting it with her fists. A couple of neighbors came out due to the commotion. They seemed to know who she was. They apologized to us and said it was a big misunderstanding. We quickly got into the car, and my friend's mom started driving us out. But we don't get far before the woman jumps in front of the car, claiming one of us was her child. The neighbors once again pulled her away. It was later that night, however, when things truly began. We stayed up late like any teenagers do at sleepovers, and we watched some scary movies. Out of nowhere, the light turned on in the hall. We could see it under the closed door of the bedroom. We assumed it was my friend's parents who were about to come in to tell us to get some sleep. However, no one came in. I decided to have a peep out the door. Nothing at all. My friends joined me to see why the light suddenly turned on. Out of nowhere, my friend says, "It's her." And through a large window facing the backyard, we see that woman standing there, looking in. However, the second she saw us stare at her, she ran away. Disturbed by this, we came back inside the bedroom and locked the door. We were obviously quite shaken up by this. Who is she? What does she want? We sat around for an hour, nervous, on high alert. However, we eventually did somehow manage to fall asleep. That morning, my friend's mom told us the situation at the housing complex shook her up so much that she thought she had seen that woman standing over her bed in the middle of the night. My friends and I never even told her we saw that woman at the house that night, which led us to wonder, what if, just maybe what if, that woman actually was inside the house that night?
I was was 22 years old, attending a Halloween party at my former best friend Nick's house, who died of a heroin overdose in 2013. Before his death, he would throw big Halloween parties every year at his house, as his parents routinely flew to New York every year to attend their own friend's party. He was always a big Halloween freak, so the whole house was littered with truly horrifying props that we all knew Nick spent way too much money on. He even put up giant walls of cardboard and covered them with wallpapers to create a haunted maze of sorts. I want to keep this story PG-13 rated, so I'll skip the weed, beer, LSD, and sex, and get right to the part where things got bad. I'll admit, we weren't in our right minds. None of us were. Anyone who came to Nick's parties knew what went down. Me, Nick, and a few other guys, Vinny G, Joey, and Q, were upstairs in Nick's room smoking a bong when we heard two steady, loud bangs come from downstairs. Nick clumsily but panickingly rushed to open the door and see what was going on. There were sounds of screaming of both guys and girls. I remember quite clearly it sounded as if there were a crowd of people screaming for their lives down there. We all called Nick to come back in and shut the door. Even under the influence of drugs, we all knew what was going on. Nick ran back inside and shut the door quickly but also quietly, locking it behind him. He turned to us and had on the facial expression of someone who had just witnessed murder. "What did you see? What's going on?" we all shouted at him. He told us to hide before anything else. We all knew why. From that point on, we didn't ask questions. Nick hit the lights and hid in the closet with Joey, while I hid under the bed with Q, and Vinny G hid in the storage box. We could hear the blasting music from downstairs turn off, followed by a grown man screaming at everyone to shut up. One unfortunate girl let out a scream of shock and fear, and after another bang, silence. The man started shouting at everyone again, but personally I couldn't hear it too well, and I certainly as hell wouldn't remember exactly what he was shouting. We heard two other men shouting. By now there were a confirmed three intruders in the house, but there could have been more for all we knew at that point. We heard the sound of boots stomping up the stairs and then coming halfway down the hall and stopping outside the bedroom door. The intruder on the other side of the door tried the doorknob, but when he realized it was locked, he started ramming into the door with most likely his shoulder. After a few failed attempts at that, the sound of a few shots to the doorknob were clearly enough to break the lock, allowing the door to swing open. We heard cries from downstairs after the shots to the doorknob, followed by silence and gunshot. I watched through the transparent cloth that hung from the bottom of Nick's bed as the black boots with overlapping ripping denim jeans moved instinctively to the closet. He opened the door. I could hear Nick begging for the intruder not to kill him, offering a generous amount of money if they would leave. Nick gave himself up as the house owner. That's when the intruder ordered him downstairs. The rest of us stayed put. Apparently, Joey hadn't been caught with Nick. We stayed under the bed, shaking and afraid. There was near silence from downstairs, other than Nick talking with the intruders, but whatever they were saying was much too low for us to hear. It felt like a near 20 minutes before the front door slammed shut and Nick came running back upstairs to tell us that they were gone. I think the most horrifying moment of my life was when I stepped downstairs back into the living room and saw the two dead bodies laying lifelessly on the ground, holes in their heads spewing out blood. Jen and Robbie, two good friends that I still miss. I'll spare you the details of what happened when the police arrived, but despite the fact that the house smelt like a marijuana greenhouse, the police were more interested in finding out who the masked men were that killed two innocent college students. Oh yeah, Nikki told the four of us who were hiding in his room that there were four intruders in total, all wearing fedoras, masks, coats, and gloves. They demanded $100,000 in cash, and when Nick could not provide it, they demanded he fill their empty sack with his most valued possessions. All of the partygoers held hostage in the room were also forced to throw their wallets into the sack or they would be shot. After the incident, Nick became depressed. He started drinking too much, becoming an alcoholic. He stopped showing up to school and ultimately ended up dropping out. He started the use of heavier drugs, such as meth and heroin. I had one good talk with him since the incident, and he was more real during this talk than he had ever been. He told me, with tears rolling down his cheeks, he lived in constant pain, knowing he caused the death of two of his best friends. Nick died of a heroin overdose in July of 2013, not even a year after the incident.
I can tell you from personal experience that trying a Ouija board is a huge mistake. It was the summer of 2013. My friends had a vintage Ouija board that was allegedly worth a decent amount of money. My friend agreed to trade it with me for a video game that I never played, so I happily made the trade. I tried using it alone, but it proved to be just a scam. I didn't really expect it to work. I mainly got it just for the money to be made off of it. I threw the stupid thing on the floor of my living room and forgot about it. Everything was going normal until the next morning. I woke up and found that the two plants I had sitting on my coffee table had been knocked over and the Ouija board was sitting on the table. I didn't remember putting it there, nor did I understand how the plants could have fallen over. Wind was definitely not an answer. I wondered if it was possible that I had sleepwalks, or maybe I was half awake and walked down to get a glass of water and bumped into them or something. I moved everything back in place, but the carpet already had dirt stains on it. I brought the Ouija board box up to my room and tossed it on the floor. Things got bad that night while laying awake in the dark. I was disturbed by the sound of a muffled click. I looked up, not sure what it was, and then I saw through the cracks of my closet door that my closet light was on. I had no idea how it could have turned on, but I got up and opened the closet door. Anyway, there was nobody in there, but that hadn't even crossed my mind. I turned the lights off and jumped back into my bed. Probably 10 minutes later, I heard the same clicking sound. Naturally, I looked to the closet and felt my heart sink a little. The closet light was on again. A mix of confusion and fear started building up inside of me. I once again turned off the light and cautiously got back in my bed. I found myself waiting for the closet light to click on again. But what happened instead was much worse. Instead of the closet light turning on, the whole room was suddenly filled with light as I heard the main light switch flicking. I had seen enough and was out of the door within seconds. I quickly pieced things together and threw that old Ouija board in the closest dumpster. Nothing weird ever happened after that. Korea. When a patient is taken to hospital, a white wristband is placed on their left arm. These wristbands contain the patient's name and information. When a patient dies, a red wristband is placed on their right arm and they are taken to the morgue. In one particular hospital in Korea, a young doctor was working the night shift. It was around 2 a.m. when he finished his last operation. He was on the 5th floor and pressed the button for the elevator. The doctor was tired after a long day and was looking forward to the end of his shift. At 2 a.m., the hospital was very quiet. Most of the patients were asleep and many of the nurses had already gone home. He entered the elevator and there was just one other person there. He casually chatted with the woman while the elevator descended. "Hi, what are you doing here at this hour of the day? From what I see, you don't look like a patient. Have you come here to meet any patient?" "Yes, I've come here to take care of my dad. He's admitted here. He met with an accident yesterday," said the woman to the doctor. Then the doctor said, "Okay, take care. But what are you up to at this time?" "I wasn't getting sleep in the ward, so I thought I'll take a walk downstairs." The elevator stopped at the basement and the door opened. They saw an old man dressed in a white gown standing there. The old man was about to get in when the doctor suddenly slammed the close button and punched the button for the 5th floor. "Why did you do that?" asked the astonished woman. "I've performed a lot of operations," replied the doctor. "I've seen a lot of people die. When a patient dies, they get a red wristband placed on their arm." The woman was silent. "You saw it, didn't you?" said the doctor. That old man had a red wristband on his arm." "A red wristband?" said the woman as she raised her right arm. "You mean like this one?" I made the mistake of searching the deep web one time. I saw and read that some people are talking about this thing called Tor that allows you to search the deep web and it was basically posts asking for the strangest things people have come across on the deep web. It intrigued me, some of the things people have found. So I went along and downloaded Tor. Someone on Reddit posted a link to a basically hidden wiki with a bunch of useful links to the dark web. I was shocked at how many child pornography links there were. I did my best to steer clear of anything like that. I did come across a link that took me to another page with a bunch of links called the Black Pages. The page was black with a bunch of red and yellow links. The red pages seemed to be the strangest. There was one link called Personal Assassin and another called Dead Pets. Reading some of those links, I realized how messed up this whole deep web thing really was. I clicked the yellow link and ended up at yet another page full of links. There I found something that seemed interesting. It was called the Secret Society Chat. I clicked on the link and it took even longer than all other pages took to load. I'd say I stared at a blank white screen for a good minute before the page finally turned black and the chat box popped up. Next to the chat box was a black video screen. I wished that I just clicked the back button at that point, but instead, I typed "Hey" in the chat box. What happened next was weird. Someone wearing a mask sitting in a dark room popped up on the screen. I felt like my heart stopped when I saw my face pop up on the screen as well. The website was using my webcam, even though I naturally keep it off. I covered it with my thumb and tried to close the page, but at this point my taskbar was gone, along with the minimize and exit buttons at the top of the Tor window. I tried hitting the Ctrl-Alt-Delete, but it did nothing, and then there was a muffled, distorted voice coming from my speakers. I could only assume it was the guy in the mask speaking. He was masking his voice with some kind of voice changer. I clearly remember he said,
"I still see you, James."
My heart sank. He had said my name. I began holding the power button on my laptop, and it felt like an eternity before it finally cut power. I didn't know if I should report what happened to the police, but from what I knew, everything was anonymous with Tor, so it didn't even seem worth it. It was obviously just a low-life hacker. I went on with my life after deleting the Tor browser from my computer, but about 2 weeks later, my mom threw a letter in my room. She told it came in the mail for me. There was no return address on it. I ripped the letter open and unfolded the paper. Tucked inside in huge letters that filled the paper were the three words, "Don't come back." I felt like I was going to throw up from the sickening feeling it gave me. I crumpled the paper and threw it away. I didn't call the cops as it seems pointless, and I didn't tell my mom because it would only cause her to panic. But I have no idea how or why they got my address. It was a weekend night in the November of 2015. My 7-year-old son Sean was having a sleepover with four of his friends. At that time, my wife wasn't home for whatever reason, so I had to keep a somewhat close watch on them without making it too obvious. They were all in Sean's room making a lot of noise, and when things would either get too quiet or too loud, I would sneak in over to the bedroom door and just listen to what was going on. You may think that's weird, but this was my wife's instructions, and any married man knows you never want to go against what your wife tells you to do. When it was getting a little loud, I went over to the door and heard that they were all just simply playing with Legos and other toys very loudly. So I went back to the living room to watch TV. Eventually, I heard weird thumping type noises coming from my son's room. I muted the TV and could distinguish them to be taps on one of the windows. I figured let them have their fun as long as they are not breaking anything. I unmuted the TV. However, I quickly realized that things went completely silent from down the hall in my son's room. Now I was nervous that they might have broken something because it was very uncommon for them to all be completely silent for so long. So I once again crept over to Sean's bedroom door and listened. I could hear quiet giggling and whispering in the room. I finally opened the door out of curiosity and saw the four boys sitting on the rug with a mess of toys scattered all over the place. I noticed that the window was completely open. I told Sean to keep it shut,
and to also keep the noise down a little bit. Before shutting the door, I made a stop into the bathroom before planning to go back to the living room. However, when I was in the bathroom, I noticed through the corner of my eye a black shadow passing the window outside. I ran back to my son's room and told four boys not to go outside. Then that's when it hit me. There were only four boys in the room as opposed to five. Tom was missing. In a panic, I yelled at Sean to tell me where he was, and they all pointed to the open window. Sean said that he left with the pirate to go find the treasure. In that moment, I felt a mixture of feelings in my stomach, but mostly like it was about to explode. I wouldn't be able to fit through that window, so I ran out the front door and caught view of a man holding Tom's hand and walking towards the car. I yelled at him to stop. They both turned around, and then the man let go of Tom, hopped into the tan-colored Toyota Corolla, and floated down the streets. I ran to grab Tom and brought him back inside. I was no longer comfortable with the sleepover and called all the parents, told them what happened, and suggested they all come and pick up their kids, which is exactly what they did. I received a bit of criticism from Tom's parents at first, but they ultimately thanked me, and their son is still good friends with my son. The boys all said that a random guy came to Sean's window, knocked on it, lifted it open himself, and talked in a pirate voice, asking one of the kids to come with him to find the treasure. The fact that this happened in the assumed safety of my own house and that it actually worked is what disturbs me the most.
There was a woman named Suzanne who lived in an old house on a cliff overlooking the sea. She was divorced from her husband. Suzanne had been deeply depressed ever since her son Bobby drowned. She was devastated by the loss and felt like she couldn't go on. As time went by, Suzanne began reading books about black magic and Satanism. The more she read, the more she became immersed in the world of the occult. It was like an addiction. She came across a spell that was supposed to be able to resurrect the dead.
It was Halloween night.
She drew a pentagram on her floor of her living room. Lighting some black candles, she stood in the middle of the pentagram, and at the stroke of midnight, she read aloud from an ancient satanic book. Come, fulfill my desire, and do my bidding in accordance with my will. I conjure thee in the name of Satan, to whom all evil is obedient, by which name the earth is overthrown, the seas turn black, the ground shudders, fire is quenched, and all host of things in heaven and hell do tremble. Lucifer, prince of darkness, return my son who drowned by accident. Return him to me now. I command thee. Afterwards, Suzanne blew out the candles. She collapsed to her knees and began to weep. All of a sudden, she heard a faint scratching on her front door. Cautiously, she walked over to the door and listened. The scratching grew louder. Who's there? She cried. There was a long silence, and then she heard a voice whisper. Mommy? Suzanne opened the door and was shocked to see a small boy crouched on the doorstep. He was soaking wet and shivering with cold. Bobby, she cried. It's you. It's really you. She hurriedly brought him inside and put a towel around him, trying to warm him up. His teeth were chattering and his hands were shaking. I was so lonely and desolate without you, Bobby, she said. Where were you? What happened?
I remember water, he said. Cool water. And I couldn't breathe. I woke up and couldn't remember who I was. I walked and walked in the rain. These people found me and they took me in. I didn't know if I was alive or dead.
You're alive, Bobby, she cried. You're really alive.
Was I a good boy, Mommy? Bobby asked.
Of course you are a good boy, she replied. Did you love me, Mommy? Bobby asked.
I do love you, she replied, from the bottom of my heart.
Were you nice to me, Mommy? Bobby asked.
Of course I was, she said. Bobby stared at her. It was a mean, angry stare, and there was a spiteful sneer on his face. It frightened Suzanne.
I want to play a game with you, Mommy, he cried. Hide and seek.
All of a sudden, he raced up the stairs. All of the lights in the house went out.
Bobby, what are you doing? She cried. Where are you? There was no answer.
Bobby, stop this. I want you to come back right here. Bobby, please don't do this to Mommy. For the last time, what are you doing?
Just then she heard the boy's voice coming from the darkness. Aren't you glad the lights are out, Mommy? He said. It makes the game more fun.
You're going to hurt yourself in the dark,
Suzanne replied. Suzanne cautiously walked up the stairs, feeling her way in the darkness.
Bobby, stop this, she shouted.
You're making Mommy very angry. All of a sudden, the door burst open and Bobby was standing there, cackling like a maniac. In his hand, he held a long, sharp kitchen knife. Let's play hide and seek now, Mommy, he shrieked. Suzanne recoiled in horror. Backing away, she tripped and went tumbling down the stairs. When she landed at the bottom, she looked up and saw her son coming down the stairs with the knife raised above his head.
You lied, Mommy, he said. Bobby didn't really drown by accident. You know that. Bobby drowned himself. He couldn't stand the way you treated him, and he killed himself just to get away from you. Don't you see? Bobby didn't want to come back, Mommy. No, Bobby hates you, Mommy. He didn't want to come back, so he sent me instead. Just then, there was a flash of lightning and it lit up the house. For one terrible moment, Suzanne saw the face of the thing that had come back instead of Bobby.
It was 2011. I had to sell my old bicycle since I had recently got a new one. It wasn't a piece of junk, so I figured I could get a couple of $100 for it. I had never used Craigslist before, so I had to have my son show me how to use it. He basically put the whole ad together for me and showed me how to actually post it. He listed my phone number so that anyone who was interested could call or text me. The ad was up for a few days with no bites, and I was becoming impatient. I think after 3 days, I finally got a text from someone, late in the day, showing interest in coming to buy the bike. He got right down to it actually in his first text, saying he wanted to come get the bike as soon as possible. I told him he could come right now, and included my address. He said he'd be over within half an hour. I was happy to potentially be getting this bike off my mind finally. I was actually home alone. I don't fully remember what my family was doing. I think my wife and younger son had to go out shopping, while my older son just went out with his friends. But you get the point. I was alone. I was sitting in my living room watching TV. It was dark out by now when I heard a car pull up in front of the house. I looked out of the window, watched as three grown men got out of the car. Right off the bat, that screamed overkill. Why would anyone need to take along two other people to check out a bicycle? One of them rang the bell. They had to have seen me standing by the window, so they knew I was there. So I opened the door, and the man standing in front of the other two reached out and shook my hands. His name was Jeffrey, or at least that's what he claims. He was a big dude. You wouldn't have to look at him twice to know he lifted weights. He also had a really thick beard and deep voice. He didn't introduce his two friends though, who were just standing behind him looking at me with blank expressions. They weren't exactly tiny men either. As I was mid-sentence telling them let's go around back, Jeffrey cut past me and into my house, saying, "Which way to the bike?" His two friends followed. The idea of making sure that they didn't enter my house was clearly out of the window, so I rushed in front of them and led them down the half stairs to the back door. Jeffrey and one of his friends came out back with me while his third friend asked me where the restroom was. I paused for the longest time. How was I about to let this random guy go use my bathroom while I was out here with his two friends? But as I looked at his two friends who were staring at me, I submissively gave him directions to my bathroom. As that man disappeared into my house, I went to the shed to grab the bicycle. On my walk to and from the shed fetching the bike, all I was thinking was, what did I just get myself into? So I showed Jeffrey the bike. He started analyzing every little detail of the bike, like things no one should ever think to analyze on a bike. For example, some of the spokes may have been slightly bent, or the reflector had scuff marks on it. I was so busy answering his questions and trying to defend the condition of the bike from his remarks that I didn't even think of the man who had supposedly been in my bathroom for almost 10 minutes. I told the two of them to keep checking out the bike. I'd be right back to fetch something. I went inside and checked the both bathrooms, one of them on the first floor and one upstairs. Both of them were empty though. Just then I heard people walking around and talking in my living room downstairs. Then what sounded like Jeffrey calling my name. I heard them coming up the stairs. Jeffrey said something along the lines,
"I just want to talk to you. You can relax."
When I say my heart was racing, that's not an understatement. I actually thought that that night was going to be the night of my death. I quietly shut the bathroom door and locked it. I dialed 911 on my phone and whispered as quietly as I could to the operator to send police right away, or I could be dead within 10 minutes. She wanted me to remain calm and to try my best to explain the situation quietly. After explaining, she told me it was good that I was in a locked room and to wait there until the cops showed up. Footsteps came up to the bathroom door and stopped. Then someone tried the door handle. When they realized it was locked, one of them said in a low voice, "He's in there." I told the operator they found me. She said to stay where I was. After a few seconds of silence on the other end, there was a frighteningly loud bang on the door, and then another, and another, and they were trying to kick the door down. I screamed. The cops were almost here, and the kicking stopped. I heard them whispering to each other, and then I heard them stomping down the stairs. I didn't leave the bathroom until the cops showed up. I was missing a lot of things, like my wallet, which was on the kitchen counter, a couple of watches, my iPad, and of course the bike that was in the backyard. The cops told me to just be grateful that I wasn't killed, which I was, but how could I really be happy? After this, the cops said, given that they were trying to break into the bathroom, they were most likely gonna kill me, which scares the hell out of me to think about. That was the one and only time I ever used Craigslist.
One night, a father and his daughter were driving down a deserted country road. They were returning home after spending the entire day visiting the girl's mother in hospital. Listening to the sound of the rain drumming on the car roof, the girl began to doze off. Suddenly, there was a loud bang. The father struggled with the steering wheel, but the car skidded off the wet road and slammed into a stone wall. After checking that his daughter was uninjured, the man got out of the car to survey the damage. Both of the front tires had large punctures, and the right fender was crumpled against the wall. The rest of the car had survived unscathed. "We must have driven over something on the road," he explained to his daughter. "Whatever it was, it blew out both of the tires." "You can fix it, right?" asked his daughter, somewhat shaken by the accident. "No," replied her father, shaking his head. "I've only got one spare in the boot. I'll have to walk back into town and find somebody to tow the car," he said. "It isn't that far from here. You wait in the car while I'm gone." "Okay," she said, reluctantly. "But please don't take too long." The man could see in his daughter's eyes that she was frightened. "Sit tight," replied her father. "I'll be back as soon as possible." His daughter watched him in the rearview mirror as he trudged off down the road in the pouring rain and disappeared into the night. More than an hour passed and her father still had not returned. The girl began to wonder what was taking him so long. She was very worried because he should have been back by now. Just then she glanced in the rearview mirror and saw a figure in the distance walking towards the car. At first she thought it was her father, but when she turned around to take a closer look, she realized that it was a strange man. He was dressed in overalls and had a big bushy beard. He was carrying something large in his left hand. Something about him made her very nervous. As he approached, she stared out the back window and squinted her eyes.
In the dim light, she could just make out what he was clutching in his right hand. It was a big, sharp butcher's knife. Thinking quickly, the terrified girl locked both the doors in front of the car. When she looked up again, she saw that the strange man seemed to be staring directly at her. Suddenly, the man raised his arm, and the girl let out a blood-curdling scream. In his left hand, he was clutching her father's severed head. She just kept screaming and screaming. She couldn't stop herself. Her heart was pounding and she struggled to breathe. The grotesque expression on her father's face was horrifying to behold. His mouth was hanging open and his eyes were rolled out back in his head. When the man reached the car, he showed his face right up against the window and glowered at her with his crazed eyes. His face was covered in deep scars. For a moment, he just stood there, grinning at her like a madman. Then he reached into his pocket, took something out, and slowly lifted his left hand. He was holding her father's car keys.
This happened to me when I was in my junior year of high school, when I was 17. I had lived with my uncle because both my parents had gotten a divorce, as my dad was verbally and physically abusive to my mom. My uncle, being the good guy he was, took full custody of me, as he nor my mom wanted me to be in an unstable environment. Anyway, I started off my junior year relatively well. I was that typical girl you'd see at lunch with a group of friends that were obsessed with anime. So, yes, we were that one nerdy group that would always talk about stuff like that. Sometime during the middle of the school year, our classes were mixed up as this was around the time midterms took place. Because of this, I was now on first lunch instead of second lunch, which all my friends had. That meant that I had to sit alone with no one to talk to for 45 minutes. About a week later, I was sitting alone at a bench eating my lunch when some boy who I'd never seen before came up to me. I'm very shy and insecure when it comes to meeting new people, unless I find them easy to talk to. He introduced himself as Kevin. I'd say right away, I started getting weird vibes from him. I don't know what it was, but something about him just made me feel really uneasy. Trying my best to be polite, I introduced my name in a relatively soft tone. He then says in a raspy voice, "So, Angela, what are you into?" I told him my interest by giving him somewhat of a dry response, but I was trying to give him the hint that I wasn't interested. However, rather than taking a step back, he did the exact opposite and took a step forward. "You seem really nice. Can I get your number?" "I'm a really nice person. I'm just very socially awkward." I stupidly gave him my number. I then told him that I had to get back to class and that it was nice meeting him and said goodbye. Throughout the day, I tried my best to shake the negative feelings I got from Kevin and focus on the present moment. I told my friends about him, and they immediately jumped to jokes talking about how he, quote, must like me and stuff like that. I hated it when they did stuff like that, but hey, that's expected when you hang out with a bunch of groups. That night, I received a text from an unknown number, and right away, I immediately assumed that it's Kevin, and of course, it was. He texted me, "Hey," and I then did the same. He immediately started talking about his day and how he had received a ton of homework from his teachers. I could relate to this, as I'm in the honors program, and any student knows that if you're in the honors program, you get flooded with homework. A few days went by with him texting me about his day, but then his text started to become a little more personal. He started talking about sex and if I liked it. I replied with a firm no and told him that I wasn't interested in talking about stuff like that. He would immediately start apologizing, saying things like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable," or anything like that. After he said that, he started to change the subject to something else related to anime, but as time passed, he'd eventually start talking about sex again. I've warned him multiple times, and I eventually started to ignore him and his text. However, that only seemed to make the situation worse. He'd sometimes stare at me from a distance at school and leave voicemails on my phone about how pretty I was dressed that day and how he wanted to, quote, make me his. I have no idea how he did it, but he eventually ended up finding my entire class schedule, and I'd occasionally see him peeking through the door to look for me. At this point, I've already blocked him and tried my best to avoid him at all times when I'm at school. Unfortunately, he didn't seem to get the hint and he kept stalking me, whether it be in person or online. I had enough, and my parents and I filed a police report against him, and as far as I know, he had been expelled from school. I ended up learning a couple things about Kevin after he left. He had photos of girls from school posted all over his wall, each of them with their name and the exact date the picture was taken. The creepy thing is that he took the pictures without their knowledge. Now, this is where I felt as if my whole world had fallen apart. Police had discovered a little box of his that had at least 20 photos of a person. That person being me. He had taken photos without my knowledge at lunch, in my class, and even at my bus stop. However, there was one picture that he took of me, sleeping in my bedroom. The creep had been in my house. Police, of course, arrested him for this, and I never seen him since. I had to get 3 months of therapy after that to help me get through, and I eventually did. I hope I never see Kevin again. My friends and I grew up in New York in a pretty suburban area ever since fifth grade. Our circle of friends was large back in the day, but the four core members of our group were myself and my three best friends, Johnny, Devin, and Nick. We were 16 years old at the time, and we were having a movie night at Nick's house as his parents had gone up to the Cape for the weekend, so we'd had the house to ourselves. We were at Nick's house as he had to watch over his German Shepherd, Bonzo. When we had arrived, we had helped ourselves to Nick's dad's stock of booze and then played some video games all the way to doing prank calls past 10 p.m. It sounds childish, but hey, you're only a teen once, right? We get about halfway through the movie when there was an unexpected knock at the door. Nick looked confused and had told us that he wasn't expecting any more visitors. As he requested, I get up and go to the door with him. We thought that maybe we had been making too much noise and that it was his neighbors coming to complain, but that wasn't the case. Standing on the porch was a Domino's pizza delivery guy with a large pizza box in his hands. "Hi there, large pepperoni pie paid for online." This was very strange, as we hadn't even thought of ordering pizza. But 16-year-olds and pizzas are natural allies, so we gladly take it off his hands. I mean, who wouldn't take a free pizza? We tip the guy to be nice, and he tells us to have a good night, and proceeded to walk away, disappearing into the night. The only thing was that there was no vehicle in sight, so we figured that he must have parked a few houses down. We bring in the pizza to the living room, and tell the others how we just got lucked out. Devin, being the honest and nice person he was, told us that we shouldn't just eat someone else's pizza. We looked at each other and realized that it was the wrong thing to do, so we leave the pizza on the counter and call up Domino's. Eventually, we get through to them and inform them that someone else's pizza had been dropped off at our place and that the delivery guy should take it back to the correct address. They ask for our address and we tell them. The person on the other line asks if we were sure it was a Domino's pizza. Yeah, it's got your logo and everything. At this point, we're all pretty perplexed, as no other Domino's stores deliver to our area. We decided to give them a few minutes to call us back, and if they didn't, we just ate it ourselves. We fix up a couple of snacks and resume the movie we were watching. I get up to get a glass of soda in the kitchen, and was shocked to what I found. Bonzo, the dog, had eaten at least half of the box. Fast forward till about a half hour later. We noticed that Bonzo was becoming really distressed, whimpering and crying, and then heads back into the kitchen. 10 minutes later, we noticed that Bonzo was extremely ill, lying on the floor and having trouble breathing, and we immediately knew that something wasn't right. We looked online for a nearby vet in the area, and there was thankfully one nearby that was still open. Needless to say, we rushed him over there quickly, and he was on the point of death when we brought him in. But it wasn't for the reason we expected. The vet said that he was displaying very strange symptoms. They ran a few more tests, and what we found really turned our stomachs. There were several traces of strychnine found in his system. It's a very dangerous poison used for killing rodents, and it causes all of your organs to shut down completely. Nick's parents came home soon after, and we tried to give the best description to police as to what the delivery guy looked like. Unfortunately, nothing ever became of it, and there were no other reports of anyone receiving a poison pizza. It makes me wonder if the guy specifically targeted us kids as we were young and naive. If that were the case, he had been watching us for God knows how long, and how would he have known that we were by ourselves? Thankfully, Bonzo survived, but had we arrived to the vet even 15 minutes later, he probably wouldn't have made it. If anyone comes to your door with food that you didn't order, do the right thing and check with the company it's from. It may just save your life.
There was a Japanese man who had grown tired of his wife. When they had gotten married, she was the most beautiful girl he had ever seen, with long black hair, beautiful brown eyes, and soft skin. However, over the years, her looks had faded, and she had grown fat. Her face had become wrinkled. He realized that he wasn't attracted to her anymore, and he decided to leave her. The man told his wife he wanted a divorce, and promptly moved out of the house. He rented an apartment in the city and took to visiting bars and clubs in search of a new romance. It wasn't long until he met a stunningly beautiful young girl. She was only 18 years old, tall and slim, with long flowing blonde hair. He was instantly smitten, and within weeks, he had asked her to marry him. The blonde girl accepted, and after they got married, she moved in with him. However, as soon as the ring was on her finger, the blonde girl's behavior changed. Before the wedding, she had been sweet, pleasant, polite, but now her attitude was hard, mean, and rude. She was vain and seemed to spend hours in front of the mirror preening and applying makeup and gazing at her own reflection. She was also very demanding. She made him spend all of his money on her. She forced him into buying her new clothes, new jewelry, new gadgets, and even a new car. One day the man came home and took a good look at his new wife. All of the makeup, the eyeliner, the mascara, the eyeshadow, all of it only hid the ugliness inside. He began to wish that he had never married her. As the years went on, the man started longing for his old wife. She may have been old and overweight, but she had been a caring and considerate person. He cried when he remembered her soft voice, her gentle smile, and her eternal patience. He regretted the day he had divorced her. He gradually realized that he still loved his first wife, loved her more than he could ever love the blonde girl. He began to understand how he had thrown away the only woman who ever truly loved him. Sometimes in his dreams, he would see his old wife sitting alone in her room, her long black hair covering her face, and late at night, he would ask himself how she was living. What was she doing? Would she ever take him back? One night, after a bitter argument, he decided that he couldn't endure any more of his new wife. He couldn't. He decided to leave her. He left the city and made the long journey back to his old wife's house. When he reached the street where they used to live, it was already late at night. The house looked deserted. Tall weeds were growing in the garden, and the windows were cracked and broken. Tiles were missing from the roof, and the walls looked as if they hadn't been painted in years. He knocked on the front door, but no one answered. Then, he tried the handle, and found that the door was not locked. He walked inside and found the rooms empty and silent. A chilly wind was blowing through the broken windows. Going upstairs, he opened the door to the bedroom, and he was startled to find his wife sitting there on the bed. He ran to her, embraced her in his arms, and cried on her shoulder. Through the tears, he told her how much he had missed her over the years and begged her to forgive him for leaving her. Her face was covered by her long black hair, but he heard her sweet voice whispering in his ear. She told him, "I'm glad you came back to me, if only for a moment." "Only for a moment," he replied with a laugh. "Girl, I'm back for good. Now we can spend the rest of our lives together." He brushed the hair from her face and leaned in to kiss her. But when he opened his eyes, he screamed in terror. Her face was a dirty, moldering skull. his horror, he realized that he had been clutching in his arms nothing but a sack of dusty old bones and long, stringy black hair. The man scrambled to his feet and tossed the bones away from him in disgust. He stood there in the dim light, shuddering as a sickening feeling spread throughout his body. He ran downstairs and out the front door, and on the street, he found a neighbor and demanded to know who lived in the old, broken-down, and abandoned house. "There's no one living in that house now," said the neighbor. "Years ago, it belonged to a woman whose husband left her. He divorced her in order to marry another woman. She was so distraught that she killed herself soon afterward."
This happened to me May 30th, 2020. My parents were a couple of blocks away from where I lived because they were staying at my aunt's house. My aunt is paranoid schizophrenic, so she has special needs and such. Anyways, it was around 4 a.m. I was a night owl, so I stayed up late playing The Last of Us and drinking soda. I suddenly had the urge to go to the bathroom, so I paused the game and walked into the bathroom and did my business. While I was washing my hands, I heard someone cough from outside of my house, near the gate that leads into my backyard. Since not even a few months ago, my home was invaded. I freaked the hell out, and I ran into my dad's bedroom and pulled out the case where he kept his handgun. Since of what happened before, my dad became paranoid and bought a .44 Magnum, just in case we had to use it. I wasn't supposed to know about it, but my brother told me since my dad told him. I grabbed a gun and then I hid under my dad's bed as I heard the back screen door open and some noise at the back door. It sounded like he was messing with the back doorknob. I hoped he would fail to get inside and leave, but it seems like nothing can go right for me this year. By the way, I live in Minneapolis. The person somehow got the door open and had entered the house. The back door leads into the basement as I heard the person go downstairs. I then remembered my phone in my pocket. I dialed 911. As soon as the operator picked up, I heard the person walk upstairs and walk into the kitchen and began opening and closing all the drawers and cabinets. I didn't feel comfortable talking with the person so close, so I didn't tell the operator what was happening. Then the person entered my dad's bedroom. They flipped the light open and began digging around through some of my dad's files. I identified the person as this big fat man wearing a stained white robe. Then I got an alert on my phone. It was a text from my friend, who I was playing video games with, asking me what I was doing. I cringed and I clenched my teeth in fear. I asked myself if I was willing to shoot someone. However, I then realized that I had my phone on silent, so it was only a vibration. The man heard something though, and began moving the blankets on my dad's bed. I gripped the revolver handle tight as I then saw the man leave the room and move into another part of my house. I got on the phone with the police and explained the situation to the operator and alerted her of suspicions that a KKK member was in my house because there were rumors that the KKK were in our county. The 911 operator suggested that I remain hidden. I then heard the man walk back into the kitchen and then I heard a loud thud. All of a sudden, the police sirens were heard near my house. I heard the man panicking. The man frantically ran back out my back door. I looked through my dad's window and watched the man in white run and hide in my garage. I went out the front yard and met up with two female police officers and explained everything, including how the man was in my garage. I stayed with one of the officers while the other one went to search my garage. She came back 5 minutes later saying it was clear and that a window in my garage was open. I called my parents who came back home. The cops left shortly after we filed a report. My dad became paranoid and searched the garage where he found a piece of white cloth underneath his car. I don't know if it was really the KKK, but that was a terrifying experience of my life while in quarantine. My dad has ordered security cameras to prevent any break-in from happening. Just be safe out there.
When I was a kid, I spent a lot of time over at my grandparents' house. Both my parents were forced to travel often for their jobs, so I was dropped off at the grandparents' house pretty often. It wasn't as bad as some kids would expect. These were the days of dial-up internet, so being upset about not having Wi-Fi was non-existent. Kids, like myself, played outside during those times. Shocking, I know. This particular story takes place when I was about 9 years old. It was right around Christmas time, and they had allowed me to open one present early, without my parents knowing, of course. I remember what it was and how I felt as well. It was a brand new pair of binoculars. I was a big fan of bird watching as a kid and still am today, but of course I had more time back then. My granddad looked at me and said, "I'm going to let you go out into the woods to look for all the critters, but be sure not to go past the creek." Being 9, this kind of went in one ear and out the other. I agreed and headed out. The forest behind my granddad's house was massive and he owned it all. I think my dad told me at one point that it was 9 or so acres. I, as a kid, told myself that I had explored it all. Funny how your imagination can run wild like that. Well, this day in particular, my mind wasn't running rampant. What I saw was real, and I knew it, judging by my grandparents' reaction. I'd been in the forest for a good 10 minutes at this point, just walking as straight as I could, looking for any of the critters that ran around out there. I saw a handful of cardinals and chickadees, but nothing super spectacular. Then, I ran across the creek. It was completely frozen over, of course, but my mind still wandered about trying to think of what could be on the other side. Why wasn't I allowed over there? Of course, it was for safety reasons. Once you're past the creek a little ways, the house is no longer within seeing or shouting distance. In my mind, however, it was the only place I'd see what I wanted to. I wanted to see a bird I hadn't seen, the less common ones. I looked back at the house a few times, contemplating my decision, and had decided not to go over the threshold and disobey my granddad, but then I heard something on the other side. It was a man's voice. It wasn't scary, I remember. It was warm and inviting, kind of like a good audiobook. I grabbed my attention and, before I knew it, jumped the creek and headed deeper into the woods. I didn't hear that voice again for quite some time, and I wasn't seeing any new birds, so I was beginning to think this was a waste of time. I decided to take one more look into the binoculars, do a quick 360, and then head back. The sun was starting to go down, and I knew if I was out here much longer, I'd get into trouble. I pulled the binoculars to my eyes and took one last look, and I saw it. It wasn't what I was looking for. It was a man. He was tall and wore a fine black suit. He even had a briefcase with him. Judging by how strong the binoculars were, he could have been a little less than half a mile away. He wasn't doing anything. He was just standing there. The longer I looked, the more apparent of how wrong this was came over me. Why would someone in a suit carrying a briefcase be hanging out in the woods in the middle of December? I was so focused I didn't hear my granddad approaching. Soon, he snatched me up and carried me all the way back to his house, scolding me the entire way. Back home, I sat on the couch and he questioned about what I could have seen that made me disobey him. Through my sniffling and eye-rubbing, I could only say, "I heard a man out there." His demeanor changed completely and I remember hearing my grandpa gasp a little bit. He crouched down beside me and said, "What did he say?"
"He just said, 'Hey,' and then he was gone. I didn't see him until I crossed the creek."
Nearly whispering, he responded, "What did he look like?"
"He had a suit and a briefcase. Are you going to tell my mom?"
He looked up at my grandmother and then back at me.
"No, no, we're not, kiddo. Don't worry. We're not mad. We were just worried about you."
It wasn't until I was much older that I figured out what I saw in those woods. I was 18 and my granddad was in bad health. He wasn't set to pass anytime soon, mind you, but he was just very sick. We were visiting in the hospital and when my parents left to get some food, he told me all about what that man was. Apparently there used to be a cemetery on that land before it became overgrown with trees and vines. That man was a spirit everyone referred to as the Undertaker. According to my granddad, he was a businessman, hence the briefcase, but suffered a heart attack during his wife's funeral. Nowadays, he roams the woods, looking for the grave of his wife. It was a heartbreaking tale, The reason he was so worried about me at the time is because it said that if you're caught by the Undertaker, he'll curse you. You'll fall gravely ill and eventually pass away from cardiac arrest like him. I'm not sure how much I believe that story, but I will say that I'm glad he never looked at me. His back was facing me the entire time. My grandma did eventually pass away, not cardiac arrest if you're curious, but I've kept the legend strong. I tell everyone I know about it, and if I ever run across kids in that area while visiting the old house, I make sure to tell them, never go past the creek.
This happened to me a couple of years ago. It was late May in the evening. I had just finished cleaning up from dinner and it was a nice evening out. I had 3 big dogs and have to take each of them individually for a walk. My oldest dog is 11 years old and deaf. He is usually the first I walk as he gets tired easily. I grabbed my phone, put my headphones in and headed out the door with my old boxer. I live in a rural area. The houses are quite far apart and set quite far off the road, so I never had to usually worry about running into too many people on my nightly walks. My area is also very safe. Nothing ever happens here. I was about 10 minutes into my walk listening to scary stories on YouTube. Yes, I listen to horror stories as I walk my dogs in the dark, when I noticed headlights coming up behind me. I didn't pay much attention, just moved closer to the side of the road, pulled my dog over onto the dirt to stay off the road as the car went by. I kept walking and noticed that even though I saw headlights from behind me, they weren't going past me. I'm female, 35 years old, about 5'4", blonde hair that was up in a ponytail. I had a feeling that I should turn around, and when I did, I saw a pickup truck with 2 people inside, pulled off on the side of the road, about 15 feet behind me. I could make out the silhouette of the driver and the passenger, but not their faces. I kept walking, thinking they had just pulled over for some reason that had nothing to do with me. Well, I was wrong. About 30 seconds after I turned around to look at the truck, it started slowly creeping along the road behind me. I was getting a little freaked out, but tried to play it off like I didn't care what they were doing, and kept on my walk. Please keep in mind my dog is very old, and would be of little help to me if these people were to get out of their truck. I started walking a little faster and the truck kept following behind me. About a minute later I decided to turn around, and started heading back to my house, so I had to walk past the truck. As I turned around, they stopped in the road and didn't move. I was going into full panic mode at this point, so I pulled my phone out to call my husband. As I was dialing his number, the truck started honking its horn at me, and the driver rolled down the window and said, "Hey, we're lost, can you help us?" I ignored them and kept walking, praying my husband would answer the phone. He was still at work and didn't pick up, so I started walking faster. The truck then did a complete turn in the middle of the road, turned its high beams on me and sat there revving its engine over and over. The sound of this made me start running with my old dog, who has a hard time walking quickly as it is. I'm running with my dog, the truck still sitting revving the engine. Then all of a sudden it takes off towards me. My heart is pounding in my ears and the fear and panic I felt in that moment, indescribable. I can hear the truck flying down the road towards me, and they're now honking their horn over and over again. I was still at least 5 minutes from my house, and between me holding on to my dog and running, I dropped my phone somewhere in the dirt on the side of the road. I kept running as fast as I could with my dog, turned my head to see that they were heading straight at me from the road. I grabbed my dog and jumped down into the ditch to narrowly avoid being hit. The truck kept honking as it drove down the road past me and kept on going. I truly thought I was going to end up kidnapped or dead from them hitting me. I was so terrified I pulled my dog into the woods for at least 15 minutes to make sure the truck didn't come back. I finally made it home, absolutely terrified, called my husband from my landline. He was almost home, so when I told him what happened, he was very sorry that he didn't pick up when I had called him. I did phone the police when my husband got home. They came out and took a report. I gave them a description of the truck and the man, but they didn't end up finding who they were. Just a word of advice. Don't walk along dark country roads at night with an old dog, and always carry pepper spray or something with you to protect yourself. I never thought something like that would happen to me that close to home.
I'm really close with my best friend and her family. I mean, we have known each other since we were two, and we lived on the same street even till this day. Since we have known each other for so long, and we have a lot of stories to share, but today I thought to share this one. When we were eight, she invited me to go camping at a local campground for the weekend, and I desperately wanted to leave my house, so I accepted. When we first got there at around 10 p.m., we thought it would be fun to scare some people by hiding in the bushes and jumping out. It was fun, and we got a few people, and some of them just chuckled and thought we were cute and kept walking. And then we jumped out at this one man, and his reaction startled 8-year-old me, because when we jumped out, he didn't get scared. He just looked at us and smiled this really gross, pervy old man smile. Since it was a couple of years ago, and it was dark and I couldn't really see any distinct features other than he seemed to be a white male in his late 40s, around 6 foot, medium build, and had a strong smell of cigarettes and whiskey, my friend, we'll call her Faith, and I were both kind of weirded out because he didn't say anything for a couple of seconds until he said, "You know, you really shouldn't scare people like that. It's quite naughty." That scared me just because the whole time he was still smiling and staring at us all over. I was frozen, and Faith just grabbed my arm and said sorry to the man, and we ran off. The next day was normal, but when it was sunset, we wanted to run around the campsite and be kids. When we were running around, we heard someone yell, "Yoo-hoo!" from up the hill, and so we look up and see no one, so I, without thinking back, yelled, "Yoo-hoo!" And then we see someone walk towards us on the hill. You guessed it. It was the man from the night before. I wasn't scared this time. I was in such a good mood, so I let the guy come towards us, and he yells down to us,
"Where are your parents?"
Which Faith replies,
"Oh, they're at the campsite."
When he hears that, the grin comes back, and he asks,
"Well, it's getting dark, so why don't I walk you back?"
We started to get creeped out and said,
"Nah, it's okay, it's pretty far away."
Which he responds with,
"Oh well, I have two kids and they have bikes you can borrow up at my campsite. Why don't you come with me and I'll show you?"
I was scared and all I wanted to do was go back, but I didn't want to hurt his feelings, being as naive as I was. So I accepted and Faith and I started to walk up behind the man with him, as he looked back every few seconds with that grin to make sure we were still following. After about 30 seconds, we got to his campsite, and we looked around and saw no trace of kids, let alone bikes. This was a huge red flag. He says to wait outside of his trailer while he gets something. I look at Faith and tell her that we have to hide since there's no way we can run back to our parents fast enough, so we book it to the bushes. After about a minute, I see him swing open the trailer door and come outside with, not bikes, but duct tape. This sight chilled me to the bone. Even though I was young, my mom and dad have told me about all the scary things that have happened to kids when they wander away. I would always watch murder shows with my dad and had seen an episode when someone was tied up with duct tape. I started to freak out when I see his face change from that disgusting grin to pure anger. He looks around, even right past me and Faith crouched down in the bush. After no luck, he charges back inside, and I grab Faith and we both run all the way back. We were too scared to tell our parents, so we just went straight to bed. We went home the next day and didn't talk about it until a couple of days ago when it popped in my head. Nothing came from this experience other than years of nightmares.
Recently, we all know what has been going on around the world, the coronavirus. Well, this story took place on April 3rd, 2020. I live in Akron, Ohio, with my mother. My mother's a nurse, and she works in Cleveland Clinic Hospital at night, 5 days a week. On this day, my mother went to work at 8 p.m., so I was there by myself. I'm 17, so I'm more than capable to stay home. I decided to make myself some dinner right after my mother left because she told me to fend for myself. By 9 o'clock, I was getting ready to sit down and eat when I heard a knock at the door. I looked at my phone and double-checked the time, and sure enough, it was 9:04 p.m. I thought it was weird being that it was so late. I looked through the peephole, and it was some random guy I'd never seen before. I asked him what he wanted, and he asked me if Gigi was home. I told him that no Gigi lives here. He then said, oh, and then asked me if I was sure. I said I'm positive. He took out a picture and put it up to the peephole and told me that it was Gigi in the picture. At this point, I should have told him again that she's not here, but I didn't. I told him that I can't see it through the peephole, and he proceeded to tell me that I should open the door so that he can show me the picture. I told him that I don't know about that due to the quarantine. He kept asking me, so I said, fine. I grabbed my mask and opened the door, but I kept my chain on. But as I was opening the door, I swear this guy slightly pushed it. Then he looked surprised when it didn't open. I asked him what he was doing, and he said, my bad, I tripped. I said, no, you didn't. You weren't even moving, and I slammed the door. I looked back through the peephole, and he took off running. I kept looking outside for about 20 minutes just in case he tried to come back. So now an hour went by. And as soon as I stopped thinking about that creepy guy, there was another knock at the door. Again, I looked at the time and it said 10:32 p.m. I looked through the peephole and there was a young woman with a white dress with dark hair over her face just standing there. I can barely see her face due to her hair, but it looked like she had dried up tears. I asked, what do you want? She said,
we are.
Then she stopped mid-sentence and looked behind her. Then corrected herself in a very monotone voice.
I'm from a group that's testing people in your area for the coronavirus. Can you let me in to test you? It's very important to get tested.
I don't think she noticed the peephole on my door. She looked behind her again and whispered to someone, but I couldn't see who it was. Then I saw the same guy from earlier walk from behind her and headed to my backyard. I ran to my back door to make sure it was locked. Looked outside, but I didn't see him. I ran back to the front door and looked back through the peephole, and the girl was just standing there staring at the door, not moving, not even blinking. Then I heard someone messing with my back door. It was the guy from earlier along with another guy. I screamed that I'm calling the cops, then I heard them run away, then I could see them out my side window running. I looked back in the front and I saw them dragging the woman away. It looked like she didn't want to go with them. The police came over and insisted that it was a prank. Since then, I purchased a gun from a guy that lived around the corner from me. And I'm ready for anything now.
The following happened when I was on a school French history trip to France and Belgium back in 2014, which, incidentally, was the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I. However, the paranormal events which occurred in this short trip had nothing to do with the many mass grave sites and historical locations we visited. In fact, they all occurred in the first, basic and cheap hotel we stayed in for the first 2 nights. The hotel, which I have since forgotten the name of, was bordering on a hostel. It was 6 of us to a room and 3 bunk beds, and I was sharing one with my closest friends. I also knew the other boys fairly well. I remember that on the first day we had been awake for well over 24 hours, so upon arriving at the hotel we didn't pay much attention to how it looked. However, we found it surprisingly hard to get to sleep immediately. The first strange occurrence happened while everyone was casually chatting as we lay in bed, probably at around 11 at night. Each bottom bunk had a light underneath it, and they were all controlled from one central wall switch over by the door. I should mention that we had all these lights off as we were meant to be asleep. However, in the middle of our conversation, one of the lights suddenly turned on. It stopped our conversation dead, and we were all slightly confused. This happened several more times with lights going on and off under the bunks while the wall switch didn't move. Everyone was getting visibly spooked at this point, However, one of the boys had found a second switch beside his bed, and we soon realized that every bunk had these to control the three lights. With everyone relaxed again, our 14-year-old imaginations calmed down significantly, and everyone began to nod off one by one. Later in the night, at what I estimate was about 1 in the morning, I was still half awake. I have always been a very light sleeper. I was listening to the deep breathing of everyone in the room when I heard an audible click. I turned around and saw the light of the walk-in shower was on. I assumed that someone had walked in to play a prank, but after quickly scanning my eyes about the room, I could see that everyone was in bed. I was confused, but not frightened yet. Shortly after the shower turned on, seemingly by itself, I again turned over to face the walk-in shower. Sure enough, through the crack in the door, I could see the shower water running. I turned away quickly and lay there for hours, unnerved, before falling asleep. The next morning was busy, visiting several historical sites, and it wasn't until lunchtime in a cafe that a few of us brought up the night before. Several others testified to being awake when the lights and shower turned on. We were all slightly unnerved, but it wasn't until the next night that things really kicked off. On the second night, everyone fell asleep very quickly, but as per usual, I couldn't sleep. I lay awake, slightly nervous, and the main light of the room went on and off at intervals of around 10 minutes for around an hour. Then, at around 2 in the morning, I heard a huge crash and looked around to see that the shower door had swung open, completely hitting the wall. The light was on and shower running. I was terrified. I turned to face the wall and didn't open my eyes till the next morning. The next day we moved to a different hotel, and the subject of the hotel being haunted was only brought up once more during the trip. Although this is one of the smaller experiences I've had regarding the paranormal, it sticks with me due to how unexpected it was. We found out that the original owner of the hotel had died from cancer, but I saw no evidence or reason that whatever caused the disturbance was her ghost or spirit. It is an experience that will always stick with me as being strange and spooky.
I'm 18 now, but when I was in 7th grade, I was at my friend's house staying the night. He lived in a pretty rough side of town, but we were too ignorant to any danger. Around midnight, we decided to walk to a gas station about 2 miles from his house, just to have something to do. We always like to freak each other out on these little late-night walks, so I told him we should walk through the forest on the way to the gas station. With no hesitation, he made a sharp turn and walked directly into the trees. I followed, and we began to try and make each other fearful as we would ask, "Did you hear that?" Obviously nothing was there until one time we weren't talking and heard a loud snap, like someone stepping on a branch. Instantly we stopped and looked at each other, then began to bust out laughing because how scared we got. We continued walking and eventually got out of the trees to the dimly lit street. I live in a small town, so there was only a small hotel and a bar in front of us. We continued walking when all of a sudden my friend nudged me, asked me if I had noticed the person behind us. Once again, thinking he was trying to scare me, I told him to shut up. But when he looked at me, I could tell he wasn't kidding. I glanced over my shoulder and he wasn't kidding. There was a person about 50 feet behind us. It was too dark and they were too far away to see any features, but the silhouette was definitely there. I whispered to my friend that we should go to that hotel and to not look back again. We eventually stepped into the light coming from the sign of the hotel and checked. Sure as shit, it was still behind us. We looked at each other and made the decision that we should get to that gas station and fast. We continued walking and I glanced over my shoulder. The person had walked into the hotel and we were now alone. I called my friend a pussy and we laughed as we were reaching the gas station. Inside we bought some drinks, laughed off the situation, and decided we should keep walking to our other friend's house, about a mile away. We began walking when I felt like someone was following us. I turned around and that's when I saw it. The same person had somehow caught up, was only 10 feet behind us. this time fully lit up. A tall, lanky figure draped in brown clothes loomed over us. My eyes crept up, and that's when I realized there was no face, no eyes, no nose, no mouth, nothing. Just a faceless person. We both dropped our drinks and bolted to the nearest public place. Thankfully, we saw some cop cars and ran to them. We stopped and looked back. The person had now crossed the street, but its head was fixed on us. The body sideways, but the head still looking at us. The creature walked straight into the trees like we had done so earlier. And as fast as it started, it was over. Day 10 of self-quarantine. I live in an apartment in New York City. New York City has been hit harder than any other state in the U.S. I live alone and was watching TV at 2 a.m. last night. I noticed a strange sound at my door. It was a scratching sound followed by a meow-like cat sound. What the fuck is going on? I get up off the couch and crept slowly and silently to my door. The scratching sound continued. I looked out my peephole and didn't see anything. I was more than concerned at this point. I walked back to my kitchen area to get some water before I went to sleep. My apartment is a very small studio-style apartment. I essentially live in one large room with all of my amenities close at hand. When my head finally hit my pillow, a knock at the door came once more. I about jumped out of my skin. I approached my door with my handgun and peeped out the hole once more. I saw a man on all fours licking his hand like a cat. I yelled through the door that I was armed. That would-be intruder stood up slowly, placed his large knife directly against my door's peephole. I figured I would catch him off guard, and I had only milliseconds to react. I drew my gun and pulled the door open in a flash. He took a step back. We locked eyes in that moment, and he meowed at me and winked. He slowly walked down the long hallway and vanished. I am still to this day asking what the fuck that was. I walked the length of the hallway to make sure he had exited the building. Never saw him again. I walked back to my apartment door and somehow ended up locked out. My door never locks when it closes. Maybe in the madness I accidentally locked it. I'm without a key to my apartment, and I just heard heavy footsteps coming up from full staircases on my floor. I'm outside in the hall with my gun and boxers. Should be an interesting night.
So when I was in my first year in high school, I had a teacher whose name was Dr. Johansson. He used to teach my class civics. He was a special fellow, not like other teachers. In the school I attended, teachers were often not close to students in a social way. They were simply there to teach, and that only. Dr. Johansson liked to keep contact with the students, so he decided it would be a lot easier to do so if he had a Facebook account. He started adding people on Facebook from our school, and eventually started talking to them. He often posted weird stuff on his wall, and commented weird things. For example, one time he posted the song Straight Outta Compton by N.W.A. and wrote, "All they say is the N-word, 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 N-word. I don't get it." Of course, some students commented and asked him why he had used the N-word so freely. He removed the post and apologized, blamed it on being drunk. And this was nothing. He started talking to students, mostly boys, and he managed to find some students' numbers and started sending them texts randomly. He would send stuff like, "Do you need help with homework? You could come over to my place and I could help you out over a glass of wine." And this he would say to teens that were younger than 18 years old, so according to the law, they are not even allowed to drink. And he pretty much offered alcohol to minors. Remember, he's a civics teacher. He should know this stuff by heart. It's also morals, for God's sakes. Anyway, he never sent me a text, but he sent some weird texts to my friends. Later on, he decided to talk to me. This was a couple of weeks after he had started contacting students like this. He would speak to me on Facebook chat. He would ask me things like,
How do you get girls? Do you have a big dick? Do you often get to sleep with girls after your shows? Because I'm an artist, and I found these messages highly disturbing. They became worse, like, you must be such a stallion in bed. You were probably really good, and enter the rabbit hole with me. Come on, I'll take care of you. I had no clue what the fuck that meant. And that wasn't even everything. After a while, things started to get out of control. He started asking me to go out with him to the clubs, and I wasn't even of age at the time, and he said he could get me into the clubs with no ID and all would be well. Now, of course, I said no. He then apparently got pissed at me and decided not to speak to me much after that, since I had turned him down a few times. He started talking to one of my nearest friends instead. It ended up with Dr. Johansson sending my friend a picture of his ass with the caption, "Please, take me from behind and take me hard." Mind you, my friend was 17 at the time, whilst Dr. Johnson was around his mid-30s. He was taken to court and Dr. Johansson got his little sentence. He was to do community service for a little while, and then he was to pay my friend a fine. That was it. Dr. Johansson still works at a school today and is totally accepted. I find that very wrong, people. Very wrong. A man like that should not be able to get into that line of work again. Things could have gotten much, much worse.
This encounter happened to me just recently, about a month ago, before the global pandemic. I'm a 20-year-old female, and I was working the night shift at my local Papa John's with my two coworkers, Vicky and Carl, and we were getting ready to close up shop for the night. I was pretty bummed having to work the night shift, but it was only one night, and my manager agreed to pay me overtime and an extra day off. Anyway, I told Vicky to clean off the tables and that I would clean the windows, as these were our main duties for closing. I'm cleaning the windows when I notice a man in his mid-40s out in the parking lot, ranting on about something on the phone. He was wearing a shirt that used to be white, but was now clearly yellow and brown, along with a Yankees baseball cap. The Papa John's was located in a not-so-great area of town, so we were used to seeing people like this every now and then. I paid no attention to him and continued cleaning the windows when I suddenly see him approaching the front door. We had already locked all of our doors and were 20 minutes away from closing, so I politely told him that we were closed and that he had to come back tomorrow. "Can I just come in to use the restroom? I'll be real quick." As much as I wanted to let him in, I told him no once again and that there was a 24-hour gas station just down the road and that he could try there. He then stared at me with an empty, pale look on his face, which then began to form into a frown. In my opinion, it was the type of look a toddler gives their parent when they can't have a toy. And coming from someone this age, it's much more disturbing. He then slowly walked away, disappearing into the night. After a while, I didn't see the man anywhere, so I figured he must have left, which I found relieving, as I don't like dealing with customers like that. 10 minutes go by, and I remembered that I had to take the trash out and replace the bags. I grabbed the two heavy garbage bags and started heading out, but Steve, our delivery guy, had just gotten back from his last delivery and offered to take the trash out for me. I gladly accepted, and he did just that. But when he came back in, he looked so petrified and stiff as a board. His face was pale, and his eyes were wild. Being the good friend I was to Steve, I asked what was wrong, and he told me to come behind the counter. What he told me sent shivers up my spine. That guy who wanted to come in earlier was crouched down by the dumpster waiting for you with a roll of duct tape. I told Steve to call the police while I informed my manager about the situation. He told us to close all doors and call the cops immediately. The nearest police station was about 5 minutes away, so they came within a couple of minutes. However, just like in most situations like this, the man wasn't there. He must have been waiting for me this whole time to take out the trash so that he could do God knows what to me. The next day, my manager swore to me that I would never work another night shift again. I still work there till this day, and nothing has happened since. And Steve always drives me home from work after our shifts. I am forever grateful that Steve was there that night. But I still wonder what would have happened to me had I had been the one who took the trash out that night.
I'm 15 years old and I prefer my full name was not revealed, but my name is Luke. This happened to me about 2 weeks ago while I was quarantined because of the coronavirus. Since there has been no school, I've been able to stay home a lot more. On a Friday night, my parents went to go visit my older brother who is 25 in the city to check on him while I stayed at home because I wasn't feeling well. At around 10 o'clock, my mom texted me that they would be staying the night at my brother's house and would be back in the morning. I started to feel better and stayed up late a couple more hours playing video games. Then I heard my backyard gate open. My window was right by the backyard, but I thought it could have been my dad. But then I heard a voice I didn't recognize by my window. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but I immediately got scared. I started searching for my phone, but I couldn't find it. And since we didn't have a house phone, my iPhone was the only way to contact my parents. I started hearing pounding on my back door, which gave me goosebumps. I turned off my computer and crawled under my bed. I heard three more pounds on the door until it finally burst open, and I heard the intruders enter my house. I knew I had to arm myself in case they found me, so I grabbed a screwdriver by my nightstand. As I did this, I heard the voices of three men speaking Spanish. As I went to crawl back under my bed, I knocked down my book on my dresser, and it made a loud thud. Then I heard more Spanish and someone walking. They were walking towards my bedroom. I hid under my bed. As I saw someone enter my room, I was afraid. I covered my mouth as I watched the figure search around my room for about 30 seconds, until giving up and leaving. Put my ear down to the floor, and I heard rustling going on in the basement and loud yells in Spanish as if two men were arguing. I then finally found my phone on the floor under my sweatshirt and informed the police of my situation and whispered as much as I could. I asked the operator if I should run, but the lady told me to stay hidden. In like 5 minutes, I heard the police sirens move toward my house and the three Spanish men began scurrying up the stairs. I heard all of them exit the back door and towards the back gate. After hearing that, I hung up and got from under the bed and went towards the living room. As I heard an officer knocking on the door calling out police, I ran towards the door until from behind I was tackled by someone. I let out a scream as someone's hand covered my mouth and began choking me with their arm. The officer kicked down the front door and aimed his gun at me and yelled at the man choking me to let me go. The man let me go and I almost threw up. Another officer entered and escorted me outside, where I explained everything. The officer from earlier brought in the guy who choked me. He had a black goatee and tattoos all over his neck. He cursed me out and told me that if the cops didn't show up, he would have killed me. I finally called my parents, who came home in less than an hour, where the officer explained to my dad that they entered the backyard because the back gate was not locked. And they bust through my door because I didn't use the chain lock. As the police checked out the house, they saw that the kitchen and basement pantry had been raided, along with some valuables, like some of my mom's jewelry. Unfortunately, the two other men still have not been caught, and I haven't heard anything since. I spoke with my dad afterwards, and he believed that they were stealing food because of the virus. But the part that puzzled me is why they would rob houses if people were at home. My dad has become a lot more paranoid since that situation, locking every door, and is set to installing security alarms and cameras. And I'm very glad that he did that, because I'm afraid that the one guy who was arrested will come back and fulfill his wish to kill me.
Well, y'all, that is my time. I hope y'all enjoyed the show. Those of you who tuned in, thank you. I love y'all and appreciate it. Those of you who are listening to the playback and caught this show, I guess, in passing on Blog Talk Radio, thank y'all and I appreciate y'all as well. I just want to say, before I end the show and give my thoughts for the night, I just want to say y'all are amazing. If nobody has told you today, y'all are amazing. Y'all are important. Y'all are magical. Y'all are the superwoman, supervillain, super whatever in your life. You can do all things if you put your mind to it. Do not allow negativity to take up space in your head and live rent-free, because it's not fair to yourself to be like that. But anyway, join in tomorrow. Same time, same place. We're going to have fun, as always, like we've been doing for the past 30 days. But I'm going to leave y'all with my thought of the night. And my thought of the night is this. Don't portray a lifestyle or mindset of unbotheredness. Show it and live it. Because when you say that you're unbothered, you will not react in such a way that shows otherwise. So if you live in life and you're doing all the things that make you happy and positively free, use the energy of unbotheredness to set forth a new path that does not only say that you're unbothered, but shows it as well. So with that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.